Great. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for Sunrise Data Review Call on Wednesday, the 29th of May, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Zoom room. If you're only on the audio bridge at this time, could you please let yourself be known now?
Yeah, motion.
I think I heard somebody, but I'm not so sure. I'll move forward. I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to you, Julie. You can begin.
Thank you very much, Julie. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. And just I will quickly run through the agenda. The first item is updates to statements of interest. Next will be a brief review of the work plan and timeline. Third is the discussion of the proposed answers and preliminary recommendations and concluding the review of related individual proposals. And I won't read the list there. You can see it in the Zoom room. And the last item is any other business. Ask if anyone has any other business. Seeing no hands, going back to agenda item one, may I ask if anyone has updates to statements of interest? Seeing no hands, I will go to agenda item two and ask Ariel Leong to put up the work plan timeline and give us a briefing on it.
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel Leong from staff. We have three calls, including today's call, before I can 65. So as Julie mentioned, today's task is to try to finish reviewing the draft text for half of the charter questions. So we believe that's seven of them. That's a very aggressive kind of plan, but we will give it a try as much as we can because the time is limited. And then for the next call, there's a similar plan is to review the remaining agreed charter questions that are not addressed today. And then hopefully the last call is for the subteam to look at the updated text from staff. So we will incorporate the comments from the discussion threads and the meetings and produce the next version. So you will be able to see the new proposed answers and preliminary recommendations incorporating your input. And that's the plan for now. That's it from me.
Thank you very much, Ariel. And the static is coming from my line, so I'm going to drop now and dial back in. And I'm going to go ahead and, I don't know, David, if you wanted to give a brief from last week's call before turning over to Greg, I'll leave it to you two to do that. And I will drop off and get back on. Thanks all.
Thanks, Julie. Hi, everybody. It's David McCauley speaking, and I'll just give a brief review of what we did last week. We looked at the preamble question and basically is Sunrise serving its intended purpose, and obviously there were views on a number of sides. We also looked at George Kirikos's proposal number three that was to incorporate part of the uniregistry approach to reducing gaming, as George put it, and talked about that. And then we also folded in discussion about question 5B, which is the question dealing with whether Sunrise should remain mandatory or become optional, excuse me, and there was a lot of discussion about that. We had a discussion about the intended purposes of the Sunrise. There was some disagreement over what the intended purposes might be, whether to protect trademark rights not to create new rights for trademark holders, whether it was for the good of the DNS, whether it was simply to tamp down abuse to consumers and users, etc. And we also looked at Scott Harlan's proposal number seven about a 90-day notice prior to launching Sunrise. And we had a very spirited discussion. It was a good meeting, and I thank everybody that participated in it. And now I'd like to turn it over to Greg. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Thank you, staff, for getting us all ready, and thank you all for coming. So we have a pretty good attendance today, which is great, or maybe better than pretty good. So let's launch right into where it says we are, which is going to Q1 and the related proposal number nine. for a review of where this stands. Q1 is, or at least Q1A, is should the availability of Sunrise registrations only for identical matches be reviewed? And the proposed answer is that it should not be reviewed. However, we do have proposal number 9, which is a proposal that would review it and expand it in a way that, you know, at least arguably is not an identical match, because it utilizes the basically a domain hack or spanning the dot for part of the mark, although the mark itself is reconstructed across the dot. So the question we have here on Q1 A, and we probably don't need, and we need, that'll inform us whether we need to spend any time on Q1 B, is whether and what level of support we have for individual proposal number 9, the spanning the dot proposal, which, you know, also relates to a reference from the subpro PDP working group. So we've had, you know, limited attendance at the last couple of meetings, I think, and so we have something approaching, I hate to use the word quorum, but we have a bunch of people here. So it'd be good to see what people think of this approach in number 9, and whether there's some interest in it as a proposal or a concept to be brought further, or whether this essentially is just a proposal that does not make it out of committee, so to speak. Christine, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Christine. I'll just kick things off by saying I do not support proposal number 9. I think that it improperly expands the balance that was struck with Sunrise. I think Sunrise hits the right balance without asking for too much. And so you'll see me not championing its removal, even though I represent a registry and registrar and as well as an IP owner. But I also think that we don't need to expand it as well. So I will kick off with that viewpoint. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine. Claudio, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
And I put this in some of the emails to the list. When I presented the proposal, there were some questions about, you could even say it might be implementation related. There were some policy questions raised as well. And what I aimed to do was to modify the proposal in an effort to provide more clarity, answer those questions, address some of the concerns that were raised. And in the process of doing that, I realized that, for one, it's somewhat of a complicated process, and I wanted to reach out to some of the stakeholders to get input. And some of the feedback that I got back was that it would help to put some of those issues out for public comment. And in part because the subpro PDP put forward a similar recommendation, I was a little concerned about making changes that could affect what they had in mind. And I also thought it would help to just get some input from perhaps the contracted parties on implementation issues. So that's kind of where I left off. I understand, for example, Christine just made a comment. She's not in support of the proposal. I don't know if there's changes I can make that could garner her support. But that was the effort I was trying to undertake. And so I specifically would be interested in hearing if that is something that we could do to sort of help the consensus building process, to use the public comment period in that way. So it would have to be clearly indicated in the initial report. This was not a policy recommendation that was going out, something we discussed. There were issues, concerns raised, and that we were seeking input on that. And that's it. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Claudio. I'll respond to that in a minute, but first let's go to the queue. I've got Susan followed by Mitch.
Yeah, hi, it's Susan Payne. Thank you. And thanks, Claudio, for this. And apologies, I haven't really read your latest language in detail. I've been sort of quickly skimming it. I am a supporter of the notion of spanning the dot, but in fairly limited circumstances, and I suspect they're more limited than the circumstances you're proposing. I do think that where the TLD string in question is comprised within the trademark itself as a standalone word, then I think it makes sense, and I don't think it does expand the trademark rights being granted in the Sunrise. I'm trying to think of a decent example, and I can't think of a really live one, but we always use Apple. So it's easy, you know, let's just assume for the sake of argument that Apple have a trademark that is Apple Computer, and the TLD string is dot computer. Then I think it makes perfect sense that a trademark registration for Apple Computer could be used for a Sunrise registration of Apple.computer. And in that limited sort of circumstance and not, for example, splitting words, I personally think that that doesn't in any way expand the trademark rights the legitimate expectation of a trademark holder to be able to register Sunrise registrations. Indeed, it gives them the exact protection that I think the Sunrise was intended to give. And so I would support that, but I don't necessarily go further than that in supporting things. You know, some of the proposals we talked about when we first discussed this were things like splitting, you know, the mark Walmart and you know, to wall.mart. I think probably, you know, taking Christine's balance, I suspect that's going too far, although others probably disagree with me.
So Susan, just to clarify, is your thought that it should just be whole word splitting? Like Canadian.club would be okay, but wall.mart would not?
Yeah.
Thanks. I think that brings us to Mitch.
Thank you. This is Mitch Stoltz. I share Christine's concern. Regardless of whether this proposal would, in a sense, expand trademark rights, and I believe that it does, it certainly expands what is available under the Sunrise period. And that is of concern and not very well supported here. It sounds like these are fairly limited circumstances that could, because of that, almost certainly be handled through UDRP proceedings. We're not working in a vacuum here. The UDRP is always going to be the backstop. Don't support this proposal. I think we should be careful to treat the various proposals in a similar way with regard to, you know, do we act where a problem is identified? How much of a problem justifies action here? And sort of what is the default? So, with regard to some of the other proposals, and there's been some conversation on the list about these, you know, I think this question has come up and people have come down differently. But just taking this one for sake of a consistent approach, there hasn't been much evidence presented of a significant problem. Thanks.
Thanks, Mitch. Looks like we have John, followed by Phil, Claudio, and Susan. John, please go ahead.
So John McElwain, for the record. I would say that it is a significant problem, and you can just determine that by thinking about how frequently there are business names that end with a descriptive term such as corporation or Inc. or bank or computer. So it really was quite a common occurrence. It's not an expansion of trademark rights because it's going to require there to be an Apple computer trademark registered within the trademark clearinghouse. As I had mentioned to folks before, it was very common problem in .bank because there was many banks that had a trademark ending like First National Bank, and they didn't want First National Bank .bank. Lastly, to point out, I think this is going to be a benefit for registrars. I think they'll want this because it's going to allow them to sell more domain names that people really want in the sunrise period. So I think it is an advantage to registrars and a benefit to Sunrise in general. That being said, I'd be fine for it to be maybe an elective thing for registrars. And I think that's something really that the finer details of all this could be worked out in public comments. And by that, I'm getting at a more, I don't know, creative top-level domain such as Guru. It's not as applicable to then something more plain or common like bank. Thanks.
Thanks, John. I'll go to Phil.
Yeah, thank you, Phil, for the record. I want to speak to the substance and then the operational procedures. On the substance, I'm personally okay with the idea. I believe it's a very incremental approach towards Sunrise registrations. If Walmart wants to register wal.mart and the complete right and left to the dot combined is an exact match to their registered recorded trademark in the clearinghouse, I think that's consistent with the purpose of the clearinghouse. If they don't get it in Sunrise, they're probably going to go for it in Landrush or at the opening of general availability if somebody else doesn't beat them to it. And if somebody else does and then tries to cyber squat with it and infringe, they'd incur unnecessary expense in bringing a litigation or a curative rights process. But so that's on the substance. On the idea of not demonstrating strong support for proposal, and I'm not saying out Claudio's, if that's the situation or not, we'll decide that. But just generally, I would not support explicitly soliciting community comment on proposals which didn't receive strong support within the sub-team and subsequently the full working group and make it into the initial report as formal recommendations for community comment. That doesn't prevent anyone in the community from commenting on it. My understanding is that all proposals that were discussed by sub-teams and by the full working group on other subjects are going to be noted somewhere in the initial report, and members of the community are free to comment on them and say, this should have been a recommendation. You missed the boat. You should reconsider for the final report. Or they could say something was never discussed that should be considered. But I think we should only be explicitly soliciting comment on proposals which have received strong support. Again, that doesn't bar anybody from commenting on anything else that was considered by the sub team or the full working group, but didn't gain strong support. So I'm okay on the substance, but if it doesn't garner strong support, I wouldn't be in favor of explicitly inviting community comment on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And that's probably a as good a cue as any for me to weigh in with, I guess, at least a quasi-chair's view, which is largely aligned with what Phil just said. And that, you know, what is not, that recommendations that go out will have wide support. I think that was the adjective we were using. At least it's wide support for it to be put out as a recommendation. One could say that they support putting it out even if they don't support it in the end, because they believe it, you know, deserves public comment, and that they're supporting it on that basis, but that would still have to be support. Something that does not get wide support for whatever motivation, you know, will be in an appendix and be referred to there, and conceivably, you know, could be dealt with in a minority statement, at least in the final report, maybe not in the preliminary report. But the point is that we're not fishing for kind of to kind of resuscitate proposals that don't get wide support. I don't mean to use pejorative terms. It's just that there's, you know, if there's a lack of support, there's a lack of support. You know, Christine notes that the airing of all possible proposals in WT5 is exhausting. And the approach in the URS kind of has a lack of filter or judgment attached to it as well. But you know what's done is done, both in the past. But in this case, what we agreed to on the way in, and I think we've been consistent throughout, is that what is going to be put out for public comment as will be the recommendations, and the recommendations are those that get strong support, and that really is all the other text is basically going to be supporting those recommendations, you know, other than whatever discussion we have of the deliberations as deliberations and of a mention of those things that did not get strong support. So there is not a kind of a side door to publish a recommendation as such that isn't one that gets strong, wide support. You know, conceivably, and I don't mean to open the door a crack here, but conceivably, if we wanted to ask a question that was not phrased in the form of a recommendation, you know, we could do that, and it could relate to this or anything else for that matter. But that would, again, there would have to be wide support for asking the community that question. And that the question is not, you know, just a reframing of a proposal, but it would have to be something more, you know, particular. Where we are essentially looking for data, or at least responses that could be viewed by some as data. That is, I think, the approach we're taking. I do think, you know, for that reason, it's important to understand the level of support that we have, and that's why I'm being more painstaking here and will be more painstaking with every proposal as we go by them in order to have as clear an idea of the level of support as possible. So let us now go back to the queue and to Susan Payne, followed by Kathy and Michael.
Sorry, hi, Susan. Sorry, I didn't realize it was my turn. I wanted to respond really briefly to something Mitch said, which was just that he felt this would be limited circumstances and could be handled through the UDRP. And I'm probably going to regret saying this, but I mean, one could say that about everything, couldn't one? I mean, you know, one could say you don't need the sunrise at all because you could always bring the UDRP. I mean, that was the whole point of putting in place additional RPMs, was because it was recognized that you can't open a massive additional sort of real estate and then just expect that brand owners have to deal with that by incurring significant additional costs in multiple additional UDRPs.
Susan, we've lost you.
Susan, do you want to try dropping your audio and then reconnecting it? It looks like we lost you.
Let us go on to Kathy, and Susan will hopefully reconnect.
Coming off mute. Okay. So Kathy Kleiman, hopefully you can hear me. Echoing in some ways what Christine and others have said and Mitch have said. So I think, first, I don't see the data on this. I don't see how this is a data-driven recommendation and what problems it's coming out of arising from our data. And we talk to a lot of trademark owners, right? So I don't see this. Technically, I'm not sure how it would be implemented. If we have Apple Computer and we're gonna allow, I mean, the technical matching of this just sounds like something we haven't even begun to fathom. But if we're putting just, if it's Apple.computer, again, assuming that Apple Computer is a single mark, then would it also, would Apple Computer then also get Apple.food? How are we going to do that matching? We've got unanswered questions. This came from a proposal, as I understand it, it's based on something from Uniregistry with the Sunrise 2, which the public's not even gonna know. I just don't think this is ripe to go out. And I don't think it's based on any data that we have. So I'll join those in saying I wouldn't go with this one right now. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. We have Michael Karanikolas next.
Hi, thanks, Michael, for the record. Just to follow up on the sort of evidence discussion a little bit. I'm just putting up my notes again. In terms of evidence of abuse, I don't think, or evidence of need for this, I don't think that the hypotheticals cut it. And this idea that, we know that people have trademarks that could potentially apply to that stuff. The fact that it would be utilized is not an argument for its necessity. I would like to see evidence of some kind of problematic registrations. You know, has Canadian.club been registered by some nefarious actor who's using it to sell moonshine whiskey or something like that? I don't think the fact that there's scope for its use is itself an argument for going down this road. And I do think that this does play into this idea that we do have other trademark mechanisms or trade rights protection mechanisms that could suit that need as well. To me, it's less about the fact that there's potentially something there or it could apply, and more about the fact that there is evidence presented of some problem or abuse that needs to be resolved, and I haven't seen that. Thanks.
Could I come in the queue?
Yeah, before you go, I just wanted to point out some of the chat that was kind of responsive. There's kind of a Greek chorus in the chat to the commentary, so I thought it makes sense to read some of them out. Christine Durain says, at Kathy, we have data. There are literally half a dozen or more IP people on this call. They are telling you what they see every day. Christine says, I think we're all participating on the assumption that we didn't need to fill out the survey because our views will be heard on the calls. Mitch Stoltz says, Christine, the plural of anecdote is not data. Kathy says, I forgot to mention there seem to be fingerprints of Claudio's proposal in the SDRP question. Mitch says, could we check if Blood Bank? Maxime says, could we check if Blood Bank is a good idea for registering .bank domain? And the answer for that, I think, is it's a restricted TLD and it has to be a financial services bank. Christine says, Mitch, the survey isn't data, it's a collection of anecdotes. If we're going there, then let's go all the way there. I will note somewhat ad hoc in my personal capacity that I don't want to see the entire stakeholder community and all working group members reduced to the level of mere anecdotes. It just seems to dismiss all of us, whatever our POV. John notes there are UDRP proceedings involving spanning the dot. Christine says, I'd like to, but maybe we, or sorry, Michael's, Mitch says, at Christine, I'd like to, but maybe we're too far down that road. It does counsel for a cautious approach now. Michael Karanikolas says these aren't even anecdotes, it's opinions. And David McCauley suggests a new word, just like Shakespeare did, neologism, anecdata. So that catches us up on the chat. Claudio, was that you who wanted to get into the queue?
Yes.
Okay, and then I have Christine with a hand.
Okay, thanks. And thanks everyone for the input. My informal assessment of where we are as a group is that there is support across some of the stakeholder groups. There's also opposition across some of the stakeholder groups. So we don't seem that we're at the wide support level, which is similar, I think, to the when the proposal was initially presented. Some of the concerns raised, I think, are more philosophical or conceptual, which I don't think I would be able to address or satisfy those people with those concerns. Others, I think, can be addressed. I think modifications could be made potentially to address some of the concerns. I don't know if that would get us over the wide support bar or not. But you know, part of this is perhaps it's just an organizational issue or a process issue, but I find that we're somewhat back talking about the substance, and and which is still, it's very helpful to me to hear all these comments as the person who put forward the proposal. But you know, I again was looking at it from the standpoint that there's some issues that need to be worked out. And that's what led me to suggest the public comment approach on that particular issue. And I think Phil provided comments on this, and Greg, you did as well. The way I'm looking at it is in these types of cases where there is some support across different groups for a proposal, and the fact that we are putting these proposals into the report. And so, you know, kind of makes me dizzy a little bit interpreting what's really going on, because we're saying these proposals are going to be published. People are free to comment on them. But at the same time, we're saying that there's this threshold for putting things in the report for public comment. And I understand the distinction where proposals that have wide support go in as recommendations, with the presumption that we may adopt them and they might become consensus policies. So I understand that's the threshold we're looking for. I was trying to find a middle ground really for consensus building purposes. I think the process document is somewhat silent on this. I don't think we really envision this scenario when we were coming up with the standards for what goes out. Someone could argue that we did, and wide support is necessary for anything that goes into the report. But again, I was not suggesting putting it in as a policy recommendation, but something that we're talking about, we're considering, and that I would be willing to list some of the issues, the concerns that have been raised, to see if we could solicit input on that. That was really what I wanted to propose for today. I did have I'm still a little confused on if we're using wide support at the plenary level or if it's the consensus standard, because I'm assuming that what comes out of the subteams is going to go up to the plenary for consideration. So I still have somewhat of an open question about that, but I defer to everyone on this call and to the co-chairs for how you want to proceed. Thanks.
Thank you, Claudio. I do think this was contemplated. I'll go to Christine next and Phil. And let's keep it brief. Thanks.
Thanks. This is Christine Doreen. So I wanted to get a couple of things, because I think my chat is, I've made some extensive comments in the chat, but I wanted to kind of pull them together. First of all, there are a lot of people on this list who have day-to-day lived experiences of daily data of spanning the dot type abuse. So let me be clear that that is happening. We know it is happening, and to tell people, look people in the eye and say it's not happening because some third party didn't report it on a survey is not the purpose of this group. I think that it's a real thing. To the extent that we're documenting rationales for why we do or do not support the proposal, my rationale is that I think that the Sunrise already strikes a proper balance. I get that there's pain. I get that the Sunrise isn't perfect. We know that, and I'm okay with imperfection. I think we've struck a balance of imperfection that works, in that we protect the most valuable, the crown jewels, whatever it is, we protect that. And then we let the substantive evaluators and the curative rights mechanisms work out the rest of the details in the gray areas. Because otherwise, what you end up with is machines and formulas and spreadsheets and string comparisons that don't get the substance right. And you end up having more false positives or more wrong that has to be righted later. And so I think that the error rate, I know that there's a few people on this call that are pointing to the quote abuse of Sunrise as being a big issue, but I have the same quote for you, which is, it is not a ginormous problem. Mostly Sunrise is working. We have to deal with abuses on both sides. I just don't see a lot of way to fix the problems that aren't going to introduce a whole bunch of other new gray areas or ambiguity. So that's my point. I don't know if staff is summarizing, but I just wanted to be really, really clear that I'm not saying there isn't a problem. I'm saying it doesn't rise to the level of an overhaul. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. And that was a minute 56. I'm keeping a timer here, so it was perfect. Phil, go ahead.
Yes, Greg, thank you. Phil, for the record, I'll be brief. I really have a procedural question for staff. And even though I'm a full working group co-chair, I'm not sure I know the answer. So let's put the question out there. Again, I'm looking at process here. My perception is that this proposal on Quadio at this point has support, but not wide support. There's also some significant opposition, even from some folks who are strong trademark rights advocates. So if the issue is lack of data at this point in the subteam, my understanding is that the subteam, when it completes its work just prior to Marrakesh, hopefully, is going to forward its proposals to the full working group, and then the full working group will discuss those in Marrakesh, see if they agree. So this isn't the final word in the subteam. The final word on Sunrise and claims notice is going to be come from the full working group, although they'll give very serious weight to the subteam recommendation. So I guess the question is, one, if something doesn't have wide support at this level, but if proponents develop further arguments and data for full working group consideration, is the door still open for revisiting the subject, not forever, but when the full working group discusses the subteam recommendations? And number two, which is, I think, is the area where I'm less clear, is if something doesn't make it into the initial report as a proposal, but its discussion is noted in the initial report, and then there's very strong community input on the initial report indicating very broad support for doing something about the issue in the final report. I believe the full working group can revisit an issue and add something. It's rare, but there's a possibility of adding something if it gets consensus in the final report, which wasn't a recommendation in the initial report. Is that correct or incorrect? So I'll stop there and welcome any clarification from staff. If they can give it now, that'd be great. If not, they can give it on the email list for the subteam. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. That was 2 minutes and 30 seconds, so good but not perfect. Does staff want to answer the question?
This is Julie Hedlund. Greg, I can try to answer that. I'm hoping I'm not generating static. Are you able to hear me okay?
We can hear you, Julie, but there
very good. Thank you. So to the first question, Phil, per the procedures, and I won't quote them because I don't have them directly in front of me, but per the procedures, it was anticipated that only those proposals that received wide support would go to the full working group for consideration. If however, the working group disagreed with a determination of the subteam, and I think there needs to be a strong agreement to override the subteam's recommendation, then the working group could consider including a recommendation or a proposal in the initial report. But the presumption is no, that without wide support, the proposal would not be then considered by the full working group as to be included in the initial report, either as a formulation of questions or as a recommendation. If, however, the working group did decide to override the work of the subteam or a determination of the subteam on a particular individual proposal, because there's additional evidence or additional support at the working group level, then it may do so. But again, the presumption is that it would not do so because the point of having the subteam was that the subteam was meant to be the filter so that the proposals and recommendations and answer questions would not then be re-educated at the working group level.
Thank you, Julie. That's my understanding as well. And, you know, for anything to be revisited at the full working group level, I think there'd need to be pretty much an instantaneous idea that there was wide support, had essentially already, you know, gelling. Not just a second bite at the apple. So that the proposals wouldn't get presented again. You know, there would have to be essentially, you know, a some form of a massive tsunami of you guys got it wrong, coming from a wide variety of people in the plenary, really, really wide. And I see that as being the exception, not the rule. And I think a subteam would have to be pretty far off base to miss a proposal that would be widely supported in its plenary. So far we've had, you know, essentially eight people weigh in on the substance of this. And I would say that roughly it's been evenly split. We have about 20 people on the call, but that may be counting staff and co-chairs. So at this point, I do not see wide support for this. I do not see, if we're using consensus levels, it's divergence. You know, this is not moving forward in the proposal to the plenary. I'd like to put aside any discussion of data versus experience versus expertise versus anecdotes, and whether anecdotes is or is not a pejorative term relative to data and what data is. So that we can stick to the substance. And I think that we've taken care of Q1 and Q1B, because Q1B is a what if, and that we don't reach that proposal. It's an if it's gonna be expanded, and it's not gonna be expanded. So I think that moves us finally to Q2. The Q2 threshold question: is registry pricing within the scope of the RPM WGR ICANN's review? Proposed answer: the subteam has differing opinions on whether the registry pricing is within the scope of the RPM PDP working group. Some subteam members stated firmly that registry pricing is not within the scope of the WG. Registry pricing may be within the scope of another ICANN working group. So I'll take comments on that answer, which seems a little choppy, but not far off from what I recall being the general state of affairs. Christine, please go ahead, followed by Maxim and Kathy. Or Maxim.
Hi. Thanks. This is Christine Doreen. Just a slight modification that I think kind of draws in that data component we're talking about, which is I would propose just as a modification. The sub-team has differing opinions on whether the registry pricing is within the scope of the RPM PDP working group. Some sub-team members point to registry agreements that state registry pricing is not within the scope of the RPM working group. That's just a fact. So I want to make sure that that's in there. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Could you supply either now or in the email list the section of the registry agreement and Maxim notes registrar agreement as well that you're pointing to? I'm not sure it's that. It's certainly not that granular. So in any case, but without the stuff in front of us, can't really discuss what exactly the import of that section is. Maxim, please go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record, just a note, even if we decide that it's in our scope, it's not enforceable, and we might set a precedent of creation of policy, which is not applicable and not enforceable and not usable. It's my comment. Thanks.
Thanks for that view, Maxim. We go to Kathy.
Yeah, the very last sentence, this is Kathy. Registry pricing may be within the scope of another ICANN working group's review. For clarity, I assume we're talking about the subsequent procedures working group, since I can't think of another working group it would be in scope of. So does anybody disagree with this? Makes sense. Registry pricing issues may be within the scope of the subsequent procedures PDP working group. And if we do that, then what we can do as co-chairs, and Phil, Brian, tell me if you disagree, then we throw this to Jeff and Cheryl Langdon Orr. And as they gave us something, we give them something and say we'd like this to be considered by a working group. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Kathy. Go to Susan and then back to Maxim.
Hi, yes, it's Susan here. Thanks. I think if we're going to answer that, if we're going to answer as the answer is currently specified, don't we also need to be presenting the other side, which is that, you know, some sub-team members have expressed concern that, you know, registry pricing at an extreme level has the capacity to circumvent rights protection mechanisms that registries are required to offer.
Thanks, Susan. I think that's a fair suggestion. Let's see what others think. But certainly, if we're trying to represent the differing viewpoints, should represent them. Maxim?
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Actually, I don't see the situation where something is called a violation without actually pointing out what precisely was violated. Because if something wasn't regulated, and then it's out of scope of the registry agreement and it cannot be enforced. And effectively saying that some particular company is doing something very wrong, actually it might lead to some kind of litigation. Thanks.
A queue building, although Kathy and Susan, are those old hands? I believe they are, so I'm going to go to Christine.
Hey, thanks. This is Christine. Yeah, I put this in the chat and there's a little bit of a discussion going. So Q2 is just a threshold question about is it within scope? And my proposal just said it's not, and here's the citation. That's all it says. I think we get to Susan's point, which I think is valid in Q2A, as far as, so do the practices sort of cause a problem? And I think that's probably where we address that, not in Q2 in this point, although I think that other, you know, possibly you could say, you know, but people have problems and refer to the sub questions, I guess, if you think that people aren't actually going to, you know, by default read to the sub questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. I guess the way I read the threshold question, if we were to say it's not within the scope, then we would not even be able to answer Q2 A and B, or at least they would be just kind of chatter. So that's why I think Susan has some credibility in saying that if it rises to the level of actual, you know, abuse of the RPM or whatever you want to call it, that you may be within the scope in that particular instance. And, you know, I also, you know, I'll take off my chair's hat here. You know, my personal view is that the picket fence doesn't provide an absolute bar to this type of discussion, even this kind of recommendation. Some extent it is not binding. We had a similar issue in the jurisdiction working group, CCWG subgroup, where we made recommendations about what should be, about changes to the registry and registrar agreements on some fairly narrow issues, but nonetheless were, going in there, not on pricing, but were changes that we essentially kind of, we could recommend them, but we couldn't enforce that they be done, is my recollection of that. It's a nuanced question. And I don't know that, you know, we certainly don't have time to go through a full discussion of the picket fence. And if we do, I would want Becky Burr here. So I will go back to the queue and to Phil Corwin.
Yeah, thanks. Phil, for the record, let me ask a question here that may clarify this whole discussion. If we were to advise Subpro that we have found that high pricing at some new GTLDs has been a significant deterrence or barrier, or whatever, however we want to characterize it, to the exercise of Sunrise registration rights, does Subpro have the authority in the next version of the applicant guidebook to put in a provision that says we're making a limited exception to the general approach of the new TLD program that ICANN will have will not set prices, a low threshold or a high threshold, but for Sunrise registrations, we're either prohibiting or suggesting as a best practice that Sunrise registrations never exceed X dollars. Do they have that authority or not? I don't know what the answer is, but if they don't have it, we probably shouldn't pursue this discussion much longer. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. There's been some discussion in the chat as well. I think, you know, clearly we don't have a preliminary recommendation here on the threshold question, and some variety of views, and whether what we're discussing is regulation or would be regulation if we proposed it or not, and why would they have a remit that would allow them to do things that we don't. Not really sure about any of that. But so I think maybe, you know, within our limited mandate, I think we should give a limited answer to the threshold question and then go on to the subsidiary questions as if we at least have the right to answer them. At least that's my view. Maxim, I think you're next.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Actually, PDPs, the output of PDPs, it doesn't have direct power. It got to go through, Genesol PDPs. They have to go through Genesol Council. It's just a note to Field's comment. Thanks.
Thanks for that reminder, Maxim. I don't see any hands up. I saw a comment from Kathy. I'm not sure if Q2 umbrella is the spot, maybe Q2A. And question of airing a grievance and not a question of setting prices per se. Although I will note that some legacy groups at least set, legacy contracts have been setting price caps. But, so I think—
Hey, Greg, can— Oh, God, yeah. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I was, oh, yeah, I just wanted to, and I've been trying to read the chat as well. I was just going to quickly say that in terms of the pricing issue, if Phil was requesting that we get more input from compliance, I'm not sure if that's what he said, but I would be interested in doing that if that's possible. And just because I'm looking at it from the perspective that if there's something in the contract, in the registry agreement, that requires the registries to implement a Sunrise, and then in the implementation of that, the prices are set at an extreme level where it's frustrating that the purpose of that clause that says you must implement a Sunrise, I'm not looking at that as necessarily a pricing regulation. It's just enforcing the contract. And it's just ensuring that the implementation of the contract is being done in a way that fulfills its intended purpose. So that was just my thoughts on it. Just wanted to mention it. Thanks.
Thanks, Claudio. I got Susan, Christine, and Maxim, and we're kind of shading into question Q2A at this point. Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, thanks. And apologies. I mean, I raised this. I didn't really mean to derail the conversation and send us off down the path of 2A and the subsequent questions. I just felt that the answer in that preamble question just reads like only half an answer. That was all my point was. It's sort of, there's a question about is it within scope, and then it says, you know, some members think it isn't. But I think, you know, a suggestion in the chat made quite some time ago was something like, you know, don't we come onto that? And could we not, you know, maybe the answer is we just say, you know, however some working group members have raised concerns which are dealt with in, you know, in the subsequent, you know, sub questions below or something like that, just so that it feels like a full answer rather than a half answer, and then we get onto the discussion about circumvention. But you know, I you know, to be clear, I don't think any of us in the course of our discussions have been talking about trying to set rigid pricing for new GTLD registries. We've been talking about the, you know, the interplay between pricing and the other obligations that are also in the registry agreement, which is to offer genuine rights protections. Thanks.
Thanks, Susan. Christine, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Christine. I wanted to present just a short hypothetical, and I promise it'll be short, because I think people get it locked into a mindset that domains are only offered under one paradigm, which is the one that we all know and love with .com. And so, you know, there's a, you know, a domain name that gets sold and a person can do with whatever they want with it. Some new GTLDs are trying to do something different. And so when you think about the cost of a domain name, there's a lot that goes into it. And if you tell people you can't charge more than X for Sunrise or a percentage of X, or I want to limit it, just not even list a number, right? Just I want to limit it. You're not taking into account all the effort that's going into building that TLD. Let's say, for instance, the TLD offers more than just a domain name. There's a service or a device or some other thing that goes along with the purchase of that domain name. You're now forcing registries with unique, innovative business models that are trying to use the DNS creatively to sort of, you know, really rig up their pricing in such a way that they can, you know, only charge separate for the domain name because then they don't run afoul of whatever policy this is. I mean, you have to be thinking more broadly, especially as the next round is coming up. You shouldn't assume that a registry operator is going to be just selling a domain name to some random person to be used for, you know, SEO or, you know, whatever, you know, ads or whatever their little website is. I mean, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. So as we think about this question and grapple with, you know, concepts of pricing, there's a reason why it's behind, why it's outside the picket fence. Because there's so much more that goes into it than just the sale of a single domain name. So I just want to encourage people to think about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine. And I think if I could put in my two cents very briefly, I think any proposal that does not look at Sunrise pricing as proportionate to kind of the various forms of regular pricing, with including premium pricing and other early adopter pricing, whatever they may be, you know, is clearly doomed to failure, because that the whole point, you know, if somebody's going to charge $10,000 for every domain name at every point, or for some serious amount of them, then you can't limit, you know, Sunrise to $500. That'd be ludicrous. And so I think anything would have to be a question of proportionality. You know, if every domain is selling for a buck except Sunrise is $500,000 each, then I think that's a different question. It would have to reach, I'm not saying that's the proportion it would have to reach, but I think that's kind of, to my mind, where any proposal like this would have to live, in that kind of disproportionate and essentially, you know, punitive to the point of, you know, the not passing the red face test pricing, you know, as in we have a very special price for you. Maxim, please go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, just a note, if we in the end come to the point where I can regulate the prices in some particular industry worldwide, we're making ICANN a target for anti-monopoly committees all around the world. And I'm not sure that it's an intentional thing. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Let's move more firmly into Q2A and what's sitting there as a possible answer. Q2A is, does registry Sunrise or premium name pricing practices unfairly limit the ability of trademark owners to participate during Sunrise? The proposed answer says, registry Sunrise or premium name pricing practices in general limit the ability of trademark owners to participate during Sunrise. However, based on the limited data and due to subjectivity concerns, the subteam could not determine whether premium name pricing practices unfairly limit the ability of trademark owners to participate during Sunrise. Any comments on that answer?
Greg, it's Claudia.
Okay, Claudia, you can get in. Christine's hand went up before you. I'm assuming Maxim's hand is old. So Christine, please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Christine. Just clarifying question, because I don't think I saw this before. The registry Sunrise or premium name pricing practices in general limit the ability of trademark owners to participate. So is the answer there? I'm getting a ton of background. Holy cow. Okay, sorry. Is the answer there trying to get at the fact that brand owners have to pay at all is limiting, or that it was sort of a widespread and pervasive problem, meaning out of 1,300 live TLDs, 1,000 of them had egregious pricing? I'm not sure where that came from, and I don't know if it's staff that could clear it up or what, but I wonder if we just need to be a little bit more clear here about what that means before we say it's a general concern. Thanks. I mean, I can't agree or disagree at this point because I don't know what it means.
Thanks. Susan, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. And like Christine, I don't recognize this language. I think it's going much too far to say in general. I think we did discuss examples and examples have been flagged to the list and were gathered during the data gathering of situations where brand owners flagged issues with the pricing. And so I think one could say something that didn't include the word in general, that said something like, you know, in the case of some registries or some TLDs or something that says something like have the capacity to. But I don't think that we could say in general. But then moving on to the second sentence, I do take issue with the use of the word due to subjectivity concerns. I don't believe we ever had a conversation about anyone's subjectivity concerns. And if we have that concern, we have it in relation to all of the data in every single question that we've answered for this subgroup and the claims one. And I'm not quite sure why subjectivity concerns are raised in particular in this answer and not elsewhere. Clearly, the only people who are going to be commenting on this are the ones who are engaged, you know, directly in the transaction. Those who have no knowledge of pricing and aren't buying names during Sunrise or aren't selling names during Sunrise are not going to have any input to give on this topic that would be non-subjective. And so I take strong issue with that. And I think that terminology should be deleted. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. I see Claudio's hand in the chat. Go ahead. Claudio, we're not hearing you.
Not hearing me?
Now we do.
Okay, sorry. I was saying that I agreed with everything Susan said and also Christine about the word generally. I think it's the opposite. I think in some cases it can, the pricing can interfere, but it's certainly not across the board. It's not a general thing. Thank you.
Mary, we're not hearing you. Found a hand but lost a mouth.
Oh, sorry. We didn't realize that we were on. So, so we've just noted the proposed language from Christine in the chat and from the staff perspective that probably does capture much more accurately what this proposed answer was trying to get at. And it really was because of the discussion around the effects of different types of pricing on registering in Sunrise. It wasn't meant to be something across the board. It certainly wasn't meant to insinuate that anyone, much less trademark owners, have a right to domains. To Susan's points about subjectivity concerns, again, that reflects the discussion that the sub-team had, and it really goes back to the discussion over the word unfairly in the question itself. So we do take the point about it jumping out because of where it is in this question, but our suggestion is that Christine's proposed language is the one that probably more accurately reflects what the situation is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And I think, I don't know, Claudio, if that's a new hand or an old hand. I do see a hand from Christine. Has something to share with the TM wonders in the group?
This is Christine. I was just going to read my proposal into the record so that people could discuss if they wanted to. Again, people are seeing it on the fly, but it's just proposing a friendly amendment is a place to start. My suggestion is that we change this to registry Sunrise or premium name pricing practices have limited the ability of some trademark owners to participate during Sunrise. However, the sub-team could not agree to the extent to which premium name practices unfairly limit the ability of some trademark owners to participate in Sunrise. So just throwing that out there as a straw person for some people to throw daggers at. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. I have kind of a question of a point of information. Is premium name pricing used during the Sunrise, or is that only in general availability? I'm having a brain jam on that point. David, I see a hand, and then Christine.
Thank you, Greg. David McCauley speaking, just with a question about Christine's proposal. And if we say to the, you know, we could not agree the extent to which premium name practices unfairly limit, then we have agreed that they do unfairly limit to some extent. We just don't know what that extent is. And I'm wondering, Christine, did you mean to state that? Have we gotten to that point? Thank you.
And Christine's next.
Oh, I did not take my hand down, and I am really sorry. I stepped away for a second. David, could you repeat your question?
Certainly. And my question, Christine, simply had to do with the language that said the subteam could not agree to the extent to which premium name practices unfairly limited, et cetera. And if we use that language, we then are stating that we do agree that there is an unfair limitation. We just don't know what that extent is. And I'm asking, was that your intent? Thanks.
Thanks for clarifying, David. Yeah, that's not necessarily my intent to say that we agree. I meant to say that we could not determine whether they did unfairly limit. Maybe I wasn't clear. So we have not made a decision whether or not the premium pricing practices even are an unfair limitation or to the extent to which they're a limitation. So I would welcome some sort of friendly amendment to make sure that we, you know, correctly capture the views of the group. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. And I note, by the way, that at least .sucks used a Sunrise Premium name, but then rebranded that to Market Premium. So for what that's worth, I think we're getting closer to the answer. I'm still a little concerned, but I think we're getting closer. Maxim, please go ahead.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Actually, it was up to a particular TLD to make premium names idea during the sunrise or not, and which level of prices to set during the TMCH sunrise. It's the first idea. The second is, since the group haven't agreed about the language that the ability to participate was damaged. It should be something like might have been violated or might have been breached. I mean, the levels of ability to participate. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Claudio?
Thanks, Greg. I put this in the chat. That there was, I think it was Susan Kawaguchi who was at the time working with Facebook. She made some comments at an ICANN meeting about how they were targeted by certain registries. I think it was a limited number, but their brand was priced at a very, very high level. I think she said like $27,000 or something like that. I'm just going off of recollection, but so there was some of that going on. I just wanted to say that so that can be incorporated somehow in the answer. We'd have to use precise language, but there certainly were cases like that. I just didn't want that to get lost in the mix. Thanks.
Thanks, Claudio. Susan?
Yeah, thanks. I was going to make a point somewhat similar to Claudio's. I think if we're going to start watering the language down from what Christine originally proposed to some of the suggestions that have come up subsequently, then I do think we need to capture as well in the answer the fact that we are aware of real life examples that have been raised with the working group where the pricing in the sunrise to a particular brand owner was significantly higher than other sunrise pricing potentially or than general availability pricing. So something that just reflects that we're aware of pricing concerns, even if we can't categorically say that it stopped the brand owner going forward with their sunrise registration. Otherwise, I just don't think we're properly reflecting what we discussed.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah, I feel like this is still a work in progress. I have Claudio and Maxim's hands up. I don't know if those are new. I think they are. We're getting close to the bottom of the hour. Maxim, I think your hand is still up.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Actually, I would recommend to avoid words like significantly higher, because, for example, in our case, it was $50 per sunrise, and in general ability, after the land rush process where the prices were way more higher than that, it became like something like $5. But you can always say that, okay, $50 is significantly higher than five, neglecting the fact that both are just nothing comparing to what you can see in the market. Thanks. So we should be extremely careful to not try to mark as a bad players registries who just had to make a small difference. I mean, in the absolute numbers.
Thanks, Maxim. So staff, I know, has been noting all of this, and we'll somehow magically turn this into a next draft of the answer. Again, not thinking it'll be the last draft. I'm going to bring up Q2B, although I don't think we really have time to discuss it, and clearly timing is an issue. If so, how extensive is this problem? The subteam noted this problem seems sufficiently extensive that it may require a recommendation to address it, although the data is limited. The subteam also noted that pricing is outside the picket fence. The subteam made a recommendation relating to the situation where, as a result of a registry operator's way of operating its TLD such that it circumvents the mandatory RPMs, brand owners will be more likely to seek enforcement via the PIC DRP instead of relying on ICANN compliance. And there is a preliminary recommendation here that the Sunrise subteam suggests the RPM PDP working group communicate the pricing concerns that have been identified to SubPro and ask SubPro for their views regarding pricing discrimination referenced in the registry agreement, e.g. Spec 11, Sections 210C and 3C. Information and insight from the SubPro PDP may assist the RPM PDP in developing a potential policy recommendation on this topic. The Sunrise subteam recommends that the registry agreement include a provision stating that a registry operator shall not operate its TLD in such a way as to have the effect of circumventing the mandatory RPMs imposed by ICANN or restricting brand owners' reasonable use of the Sunrise RPM. So that's kind of a mouthful. But any comments on all of that? Susan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I do know, I mean, I agree that we did talk about SubPro, but I honestly, I can't, in this RPM working group making a recommendation to SubPro, the timing of these two working groups is so far out of whack now that there's no realistic prospect of any recommendation we make in a final report being worthwhile to SubPro. The SubPro will be finished. And so that is a waste of effort, and really is just passing the buck. So we either make a recommendation or we don't, but I don't see how referring it to SubPro has any value or purpose whatsoever. Thanks.
Thanks, Susan. I see a plus one in the chat on that from Christine. I tend to be feel in my personal capacity aligned with that thinking. But the meat really is the recommendation, the circumvention recommendation. The language of Q2B definitely needs at least some smoothing out. Any comments on the preliminary recommendation regarding circumvention? How that's phrased. I'm not seeing any hands, in part that may be because it's now 3:25. But nobody is jumping up and down saying this is a misconstrued of the work that we have so far. So that's at least a fairly positive result. So apologies that we did not get to Q3, 4, 5, A, 6, and 7. Clearly going to have to work on pacing and other things, and then figure out, you know, how we're going to deal with this and with the many open threads, and, you know, yet try to avoid turning Marrakesh into sub-team meetings. So we'll see. At this point, I'll turn it to AOB and see if we have any AOB. I understand it's only 3:26 here in New York in the afternoon, a balmy time, almost time for tea. I know other people are working in less felicitous time zones, for which I apologize on behalf of the Earth. Any other comments on this? Any other business? I'll turn it back to staff to bring us home. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and we did not note any AOB, so we want to thank you very much for chairing today's call, and we want to thank everyone. Oh, but I see a hand is up. Christine Duran.
Thank you, and maybe I'm the lone idiot on the call, but this is Christine again. What are the next steps here? I know that we have the list ongoing, but will staff then summarize what we've talked about today and make some changes to these docs in time for us to continue the discussion? I know I see on the chat that we're going to continue the discussion, but what are we discussing? Are we going to just move forward starting with question 3, or are we going to go back and talk about the stuff and kind of wordsmith the stuff that's there? I just want to make sure that I get my homework right this week. Thanks.
And thanks. And I'm actually going to turn to Ariel Leung for that question. Thanks, Christine. Ariel, please.
Thanks, Christine and Julie. This is Ariel. So the homework for next week's meeting is keep going to the next question, and staff will take back all your input said during the call and look at the discussion threads and then update the text. But because there's a lot of questions left, so we only did 2 and there were 12 more. So the priority is to keep going to the next question. So starting from question 3 in the next meeting. And I see Kathy has a question about the threads. So we did send an email to the sub-team asking which threads should be open. And we asked folks to nominate, and we did receive some feedback on the limited time for responding. So I think we can go back to Greg and David on that question about the thread.
Thanks so much, Ariel. Then I see it's 1 minute before the end of the call. And again, thank you everyone for joining. And this call is adjourned.
Thanks, Julie.
Thanks all. Bye.